thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight Black Voices. I'm Brandis Friedman. Here's what we're looking at. The challenges in building generational wealth for Chicago's black communities and efforts to address it.
This moment represents a major milestone in the growth and transformation of Chicago State Athletics.
And Chicago State University names its first ever football coach. Now he just needs a team. He joins us to talk about building a program from the ground up. And now to some of today's top stories. The number of homicides in Chicago is continuing to trend downward, according to recent data from the police department. CPD says in May there were 36 homicides. That is the fewest in any May since 2011. It's also down 38% compared to last May and down 50% from May 2023. In the first 5 months of the year, there have been 152 homicides. That's down 28% over this time last year. CPD also says shootings, violent crime, as well as property crime, motor vehicle theft, and burglaries are all also down month over month or year over year. The data comes as federal prosecutors announce they're expanding a violence prevention initiative in Chicago. The nationwide program called Project Safe Neighborhoods has operated in 7 neighborhoods on the city's south and west sides. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District announces today the initiative will now include parts of downtown, encompassing shopping corridors, beaches, landmarks, as well as all CTA train lines in the city. According to the feds, enforcement in those areas will focus on the investigation and prosecution of offenses including illegal firearm possession, drug trafficking, robberies, carjackings, and other violent crimes. Homeowners facing the loss of their homes during the Cook County tax sale may have a reprieve. Cook County Treasurer Maria Pappas says she plans to postpone the annual tax sale by 7 months if and when Governor J.B. Pritzker signs a bill passed by the General Assembly that allows her to do so. That legislation also pauses charging additional interest on delinquent tax bills that would have been in the sale. Pappas says she plans to use the time to collaborate with housing advocates on property tax foreclosure reform in the wake of a 2023 U.S. Supreme Court decision that called into question the way property tax collection enforcement has been conducted in Illinois and many other states. Workers in Chicago may notice a bump in their paycheck starting next month. City officials are reminding workers that beginning July 1st, Chicago's minimum wage will increase to $16.60 an hour. For tipped workers like restaurant servers and bartenders, the minimum wage will go up to $12.62 an hour. That rate will increase 8% per year until it reaches Chicago's standard minimum wage in July 2028. Up next, building wealth in Chicago's black communities.
Chicago Tonight, Black Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
A local organization is sounding the alarm on the widening racial wealth gap in Chicago. The Chicago Urban League's new report, The State of Black Chicago, draws on research from the New School in New York. The report found that in 2024, the median net worth for black Chicago area households was $0, compared to $210,000 for white households. The group is now rolling out a plan of action to help black communities build wealth. Joining us to discuss that report are Kalmetta Coleman, Chief Operating Officer at the Chicago Urban League. Rendell Solomon, a financial literacy advocate and founder of estate planning platform Inherit. And on Zoom, Damond Drummer, Director of Strategy at the New Schools Institute on Race, Power, and Political Economy. Thanks to all of you for joining us. You hear that number, zero, compared to $210,000. That is really jarring. Kalmetta, you all have done this report in the past, though, but this one is slightly different in that it goes beyond presenting these inequities and provides solutions, policy recommendations. What do you think needs to be done to address these disparities?
Yes, thank you so much, Brandis, for having us. So To your point, we have done these State of Black Chicago reports for a number of years. We've also looked at the reports that other organizations like the New School have done. And what we've seen consistently is that the numbers don't really change. And so that it's time to stop talking just about the disparities and really focus on solutions. And the main key that we see there is that these solutions have to be systemic and collaborative, but also we are taking a laddered approach. So if you actually look at the full report, the title of it is A Laddered Path to Wealth Building. So recognizing that different individuals are in different places. So some people need to really just improve their relationship with money and how they think about it. You know, so often because of all the systemic barriers, we have a scarcity sort of mindset when it comes to money, right? And we don't necessarily have the best relationship with it. So thinking about financial literacy for our communities and for individuals, for families as a whole, but then also for people who might, you know, say have a good job and be making decent money, they don't always know like how to actually grow that money. And so really thinking about how to increase home ownership, which is one of the key paths to wealth building, as well as thinking about investments and starting our own businesses and really having, not leaving that on the individual to do, but thinking about how can institutions, organizations collaborate on solutions.
So a broad spectrum then.
Exactly.
And I've read some of that report. So a broad spectrum of solutions. Damon Drummer, a lot of this research, of course, it's based on a report from the New School last year on Black wealth. What do we know about these inequities and how they present in neighborhoods?
Yeah, so the net wealth for a median Black family, as we know in Chicago, is $0. And that number zero doesn't even begin to tell the whole story. Dramatically, a white household headed by an individual who has been incarcerated at some point has a higher wealth position than a Black household led by somebody who went to college. Home ownership, a white household who doesn't own their home has a higher wealth position than a Black Chicago household who owns their home. And a single-headed head of household in Chicago who is white has a higher wealth position median than a two-parent family that is Black. And so this is structural, and this doesn't come only from financial literacy concerns, but is a function of law and policy that produces and reproduces these wealth gaps generation after generation. And so the set of solutions that we propose in our report upon which the Urban League's report is based, goes into the realm of public policy so that we can get ahead of this so we're not always playing whack-a-mole on the back end and trying to clean up a crisis as it's unfolding.
And we've talked a lot about, you know, financial literacy and, you know, educating ourselves and our families. Rendell, you have taught kids about stocks and financial planning. How do you get Black people educated on finances starting at a young age?
Absolutely. It is truly a cultural issue, and thank you so much for having me. I read the report last night at 4 a.m. when my baby girl Savannah came in the room. Literally this morning, my baby girl Savannah, 3-year-old, who's my legacy, came into the room and wanted to lay in bed with daddy. But the challenge when you're talking about educating youth about this topic, we all know how important it is. And one of the things I think is critical is that we meet people where they are. We meet young people where they are. So we can't simultaneously say we want to educate and teach kids and criminalize them at the same time en masse, regardless of some bad behaviors. And so that's why when I created One Stock, One Future to give away stock to kids, I said, you know what? They have enough school all week. They're overwhelmed with activities at times. Let me not create one more thing that they have to go to. I'll go to them. That's one. And two, let me not require them to get straight A's in school. So what happens is only the bright kids who are doing well get rewarded. So my idea was just give every kid some stock if we can, and then use that as a catalyst for the education.
You mentioned it's cultural. Is this something that Black families don't talk about enough? And is that because historically we don't have it to talk about?
It's definitely a historical issue around having that conversation. We mentioned inherit and estate planning as sort of that last step, pun intended, of one's financial journey. Also a conversation that we don't have. So from adults down to youth, there's a trepidation, some anxiety around having these critical conversations. Sometimes it's even as simple as embarrassment. It's hard to talk about it when perhaps you realize you've not done as well as you could have given the opportunities that you may have. And so there is a fear of having the conversation. I'm hoping that we can break that stigma by approaching the conversation differently.
Calmetta, let's talk about wealth. Why wealth as something for you all to focus on, and also clarify for us what wealth is, right? Because when you hear $0, doesn't mean everybody's broke.
Right, right. It does not mean that. And so when we think about wealth, we decided to look at it in two ways. So one, financial wealth, the things that we always think about, you know, like, you know, what your the actual assets are that you have. But we also are looking at holistic wealth because we know that it actually has a keen relationship to financial wealth. So whether or not people are healthy, so we're talking about health equity, the level of education that people attain that allows them to, you know, get a good job, start a business, be smart about money and those things. So we're looking at that, but you ask why wealth? Really, we start with wealth in this report, and I think even in our work increasingly, is because wealth is really foundational to opportunity. And that's what we see over and over again as a divider. So we, in our past reports that we talked about earlier, State of Black Chicago reports, we have looked at all the communities and neighborhoods in Chicago. And there are 27 that are predominantly Black, and those are repeatedly the 27 where you see the biggest gaps, the biggest disparities. And so much of that is about whether or not people have access to income.
Damond, this report, you know, it's coming at a time, of course, both of these reports are at a time when the federal government is cutting many programs that a lot of Black families depend on to survive, Medicaid, Head Start, among others. How do those federal decisions impact those disparities, economic disparities on a local level?
Again, yes, I think, you know, again, what produces this crisis of this wealth gap is public policy. So what we're seeing in America is what has been done to Black people from the beginning of this country is now being done to a broader swath of this entire country. And so, you know, financial literacy is important. However, it is not going to, we're going to be right here having the same conversation if that intervention that is being proposed by Rendell and Calmetta is not also backed by public policy. Chicago needs a solution set that meets the scale, scope, and depth and persistence of this crisis. We can't just single out Black people as not being, you know, with the right mindset on this. The crisis is created by public policy, and so it's going to be public policy that helps solve the crisis. And one of those solutions that we're seeing take place in the country, across the country, particularly in states where innovation can still happen, is baby bonds. We're talking about the state government seeding children born in poverty with an account that can then be managed by the state until that child reaches the age of majority, by which they can then invest in what? College education, they can buy stocks, they can start a business, they can put a down payment on the house and have that material floor upon which they can build their adult livelihood. Right now, to date, we have $2 billion being directed to children born into poverty in the states that have already implemented a baby bond program. So the question I have for Chicago and for Illinois is, when are we going to get on that baby bond train? Because we have $12 billion in proposed baby bonds that we're seeing all across the country, and Illinois and Chicago should not be late to that game. Let's give these kids something to manage with that financial literacy.
Right, another definite recommendation there, baby bonds. On the flip side of that, obviously, we've heard about the talk of a baby bonus, right, for families who have more children, which is another conversation. Rendell, as an estate planner, how do you go about starting that difficult conversation with family members about estate and wealth planning? What do you say? How do you bring it up? Asking for a friend.
I think first and foremost, recognize that it is a sensitive and at times scary topic, and that conversation is going to be different if you're talking to someone who's maybe later in age, middle age, or even a young person about the importance of doing it. So first and foremost, having that sensitivity around the conversation. I think number two is framing the conversation and focusing on what that person wants. What does that person want? Focus more on, here are the things that you've accumulated: a home, car, your bank account, a pair of Jordans. What do you want to happen with it when you're no longer able to manage it yourself? And you just might have to continue having that conversation. That's the third thing, is recognize that it's going to take some consistency. This is not a one-time sit-down conversation. There's going to be resistance. There's going to be fear and anxiety that we talked about earlier. And if you are an advocate and really want to focus on that for yourself and your family, being persistent about having that conversation regularly.
Calmetta, how is the Urban League planning to work towards progress on the recommendations that you've made here and, you know, fully addressing these inequities?
Yeah. So absolutely. So there are practical recommendations. And so those are some of the things that we actually already do in some level in our work and that other organizations are doing. And we are really trying to, I would say, turbocharge that by partnering and collaborating more with other organizations that are trying to do something similar. So one partnership that we announced on the day of the report was really around homeownership and how to increase that. One of the issues here in Chicago is not necessarily only that, you know, black people don't have access to home ownership, but part of the reason is not about financing or income, but about actual availability of housing. And so we have started a partnership with Ani Realty and Connects, which does modular homes. And really looking at a way to get people who can pre-qualify, who are eligible for a home, to be able to buy a home, to actually get them in a house.
And I think you've also started another partnership around credit and learning and education.
Yes, with the Credit Academy, folks, really around that education.
And folks are going to have to go to our website to learn more about
correct.
That.
Correct.
Because we're
going to, yes.
We've given you
Thank
the last
you.
Word, Colmena Coleman.
Please come to our website, which is shiul.org.
There it is. And we're going to give thanks to Colmena Coleman, Damon Drummer, and Rendell Solomon. Thanks to all three of you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Brandon.
Up next, a preview of what's to come for Chicago State University's new football team with its first ever head coach. Chicago State University hired its first ever head football coach, Bobby Rome II. Coach Rome is tasked with building the school's new Division I football program from the ground up. And while they don't have a stadium, equipment, or players just yet, they do have determination. Here to tell us about the game plan are Z. Scott, president of Chicago State University, and Bobby Rome II, the school's new football coach. Welcome to Chicago Tonight Black Voices. Thanks to you both for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Coach Rome, I want to start with you. You've got a lot to do. you've got to build CSU's Division I football program from the ground up. What are your top priorities?
Well, I think number one, it starts with foundation. And that foundation for us starts in the community. It starts on the south side of Chicago. Also starts at Chicago State as well. We want to be intentional about the way that we fundraise, and we want to find stakeholders within that community. And we want to bring a very solid football program to the south side of Chicago. That's what Chicago State's been doing for many years, and we just want to continue that tradition on the south side for them.
President Scott, what was it about Coach Rome that made you all know this is the man for us, this is the one?
First of all, it's a natural expansion of what we've been doing in terms of our community work and our work with our students and building a strong culture. And when we met him, we looked at his background, his tenacity, his engagement with students, and knew that he was the one for Chicago State.
Why bring a football program to CSU?
First of all, we are a Division I sports program, as you mentioned, and we have 16 sports teams already in place at Chicago State, and we just ended our first year in our new conference, the Northeast Conference. But when you look at football and what football does in terms of bringing men to a campus, also bringing excitement to a neighborhood, it's a natural expansion of not only our economic development plan, but also our enrollment plan and our plan for better engagement and increased engagement with our students on campus.
You said when you look at what Chicago State University does to bring men to campus, you mean enrollment?
Yes, enrollment.
Give me the breakdown.
I'll give you the balance. Yeah. Right now we're 68% female. And what we've also seen in our community is a declining interest of African American males generally in higher education. And football attracts men, as we can tell from even the interest in the program. So we believe that football will not only attract more male students to higher education, but also enhance our campus.
Coach, how do you plan on recruiting your players?
Well, first and foremost, we're going to start in the community of the south side of Chicago, and then we're going to expand throughout Chicago. We want the very best. That's first and foremost. We want to find the best student-athletes that's available, and we're looking for young men that can show us some discipline, that can also show us obedience, and some men with a little bit of grit as well. We're going to go out there, hit the community. We're going to hit the local high schools. We're also going to recruit across the state, and we're going to make a priority to recruit right here in the state and right here on the south side of Chicago. So,
I would imagine having a football program at CSU would also sort of provide an opportunity to some players, you know, some young players who might be overlooked by some of the bigger programs.
For sure, for sure. Well, that's the goal. Chicago State has always been known for giving students,
overlooked
students an opportunity. And this is a perfect opportunity for us to kind of cross over to the community and give back and say, hey, you know, here's the opportunity right here at CSU. And, you know, we want to develop young men, you know, holistically, you know, holistic development. We're talking about from the top of their head down to the soles of their feet. And we're very passionate about that. We know one thing about CSU, that we're going to provide an outstanding education. That's first and foremost. And we're going to also play some great football as well. So we're excited about kicking off in 2026.
President Scott, you all are starting this program, of course, when funding for everyone is feeling tight, as we just discussed in that last segment. Are you concerned about the financial challenges going forward?
I am. If we watch anything that happened in our just state, we're a public university, and you watch the action that just came out of our own General Assembly and the challenges our state is having with its own finances and budget. But then we transition to Washington, D.C., and we see the budget bill that's come out of the House. We believe that there are challenges there for higher education and specifically for Chicago State. In the last few months, we've lost $9 million in grants, which have taken that it's income that comes out of our university, and that's opportunity that leaves our faculty and our students. So we are concerned, and also that budget bill, it slashes funding to students in the terms of Pell Grants. At a university that sees 89% of its students receiving the Pell Grant. So there are some concerns about our own, you know, economics, and I think the state is not only watching those closely, but we are too.
You know, we hear the Trump administration taking aim at a lot of the elite universities, Columbia, Harvard, Northwestern, and others. You say $9 million, though, for CSU. What does that mean? Because these other schools have some deep pockets. What is it? Not that it doesn't hurt, but what does $9 million mean for CSU?
It hurts. It means that people who were being funded through in their jobs through grant lines are now out of a job. It means that faculty that were working on hard things like heart health, education, quantum, are impacted by their research and scholarship. So it does hurt. And we just received our first Carnegie classification as a research university, and we are quickly trying to move to R2 status. So we're going to have to fill in those gaps when it comes to research and engagement with our students.
When you say fill in those gaps, fundraising?
Fundraising, philanthropy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Coach Rome, when you hear all of that, mm-hmm. right, and some of those financial concerns going mm-hmm. forward, what does that make you think, and what role do you play in making up for that?
Well, for me, and for our football program in general in Chicago State, first and foremost, we've always been very resilient. We've always been very resilient, and challenges are going to come. And anytime you start a new program from scratch, you know, there are always going to be challenges. For us, we embrace those challenges. And at the same time, you know, we're just going to concentrate and focus on the things that we've been doing for years, and that's providing opportunity for people on the south side of Chicago and providing opportunity for young men and young women throughout the city of Chicago. And those are the things that we're going to focus on. So, like I said, those things happen. And like I said, fundraising is going to be a big part of that. You know, going out in the community, ingratiating myself in the community, and also going out there and soliciting. You know,
and what does that look like? Does that mean, you know, attending games from some of the CPS high schools that you might be looking at? Who's football?
Of course. So it's going to be bigger than just attending football games. It's going to have an understanding of what they do on a day-to-day basis, you know, showing up to their off-season schedules, showing up, introducing yourself to the head football coaches. I know in this community in particular, the football coaches are like fathers to these young men. So for me to just walk up in a high school and think I can recruit that young man and take that young man for him, you know, that's not going to work. We're going to go out there and make a relationship with the head football coach, get an understanding of the type of young men that we're going to bring into our situation, and have a plan for them going forward. So I'm excited about that. You know, and like I said, 2026 is when we kick off, and we'll be in the school soon recruiting our student athletes here in the Chicago area.
2026, where do you anticipate playing home games? Where would you love to play? Where would you like to play?
Well, I would say this. I would like to play at the place that makes sense for Chicago State University. You know, it has to make sense for us first. You know, and first of all, we want the community to be involved, and we want to create a nice, solid foundation that's sustainable for a long, long time. So we have not decided where we're going to play yet, but all in all, it's going to make sense for Chicago State, and we're going in that direction, and we're excited about being able just to pick a venue where to play, because I'm going to tell you what, once we kick that ball off, it ain't going to matter where we're going to play. Chicago State's going to show up. So
it matters that you show up, matters that you win. That is where we'll have to leave it. Best of luck. Congratulations, Coach Bobby Rome II and President Z. Scott of CSU.
Thank you so much for having us.
Of course.
Thank you.
And that is our show for this Wednesday night. Check out our website for our Chicago Summer Festival Guide. From street fests and art shows to outdoor concerts and cultural celebrations, we have got you covered. It is all at WTTW.com/festivals. And join us tomorrow night at 5:30 and 10. Illinois State Police has been sharing its gang member data with ICE despite an Illinois law prohibiting data sharing between the agencies. Now, for all of us here at Chicago Tonight Black Voices, I'm Brandis Friedman. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that serves the needs of clients in the Chicago area and throughout the nation.